This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
We've been talking about Game 1 of Duke North Carolina this season all week long. So it's time for a prediction. We've talked to former players, coaches, and many others about the rivalry. We will be in the Smith Center tomorrow night, and everybody is excited to watch. However, I don't think it's going to be a very exciting competitive game this time around. Duke is going to beat North Carolina convincingly in Chapel Hill. What is it that they say every single time these teams meet? Don't throw the record books out, throw the record books out. Yeah, do that. You never know what's going to happen when the Battle of the Blues takes hold. I would do the exact opposite here. You shouldn't throw the record books out. Look at all the instances in recent memory. North Carolina played Duke when one of the sides was clearly a lot better than the other. Or, the other way to put it was, when one of the teams isn't slated to make the NCAA tournament. Fortunately for us watching, there aren't many instances where that's happened, where both teams aren't great, aren't going to make the NCAA tournament. Last year, Duke and North Carolina won seeds in the NCAA tournament. But this is just the fourth year, make it the fifth year in the last 30 or so years. We have one team who is under 500 and isn't going to make the NCAA tournament unless they win the ACC tournament. And of course, we're talking about North Carolina. So let's go through the other four times this has happened. 2010, North Carolina goes to the NIT. The two times they met Duke, Duke won in the Smith Center by 10. They won in Cameron by 30. Matt Doherty's last year, 2003. Duke won two out of the three meetings. They played three times that year. In 2002, they played three times again. Duke won all three times. Here were the margins. Duke by 29 in the Smith Center. Duke by 25 in Cameron. They met in Charlotte in the ACC tournament. Duke won by 12. Oh, but Josh, what about the Jeff Capel game? Duke wasn't great that year. Pete Gaudette was on the sideline as Coach K was recovering from the back surgery he had. A lot of people forget North Carolina won that game. They bring up the Jeff Capel shot. Duke was bad. You never know what can happen in the rivalry. Here's Jeff Capel forcing double overtime with the shot. Jerry Stackhouse and company still won for North Carolina. Then they met a few weeks later, and North Carolina won the game in the Smith Center by 13 points. So, literally, 9 out of 10 times we've had one side clearly better than the other, with that other side not being an NCAA tournament team, the better team has won. So I feel pretty comfortable in saying North Carolina has a 10% chance of winning tomorrow night. I hope I'm wrong. I'm going to be there. I hope it's the most exciting game we've ever seen. I just don't think it's going to happen. Oh, but Josh, this year in college basketball, nobody is great. Anything can happen. Duke lost to Stephen F. Austin at home in November. While that might be true, Duke's going to view North Carolina a little bit differently than Stephen F. Austin going into Cameron right before Thanksgiving. Also, let's look at how Duke has fared against the bottom tier of the ACC. Miami and Wake Forest join North Carolina as the three teams with less than five ACC wins this year. Duke has played three games against Miami and Wake. You want to know what those scores were? Duke by 33, Duke by 30, and Duke by 31. I don't think it's going to be that bad tomorrow night, but would you be surprised following the Tar Heels all year long? Would you be surprised if that's what happened? I just read you a couple other instances where North Carolina's been bad and got beat by 30 points. A couple of occasions that's happened in the last 15 to 20 years. It's bad luck for the Tar Heels. Brandon Robinson not going to play in this game. Going to miss two or three more weeks moving forward. With B-Rob being out, Trey Jones, he's going to be on Cole Anthony every single possession. Trey played 38 minutes the other night. He's going to be out there every minute Cole's out there, unless he gets in foul trouble. Which means Duke can also run a bigger lineup. Nobody else is a shooting threat on this Tar Heel team. So the problem is, for Duke, how are you going to rebound? Well, North Carolina has these bigs, and they're number one in the country in rebounding. If they go big because they can, North Carolina not having anybody else who's a shooting threat other than B-Rob, I think they're going to figure out that problem. Also, the Boston College game the other night, I think, gave Duke enough of a scare where Coach K has ammunition at practice to say, you overlooked those bleepers. You overlooked BC. Do not listen to how bad everybody says North Carolina is. Just don't do it. And I don't anticipate them getting off to another rocky start where they were down 6-0 in Chestnut Hill, then down 12-2 and only scoring 21 points and a half. I think Duke's going to jump out big, and I think they're going to win this game by more than 15 points. My prediction, Duke 77, North Carolina 71. You can tweet the show at SportsHubTriad if you want in on what I had to say there. And, of course, on the rivalry, 336-777-1600 is the phone number. As always, Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is going to join us in about 25 minutes. This is going to be remembered as the bad jersey game. It reminds me of when, see, I went to East Carolina. It reminds me when John Thompson was with the Pirates 15 or 20 years ago. They played NC State in 2004 in Charlotte, and they wore these mustard yellow jerseys. They got walloped by the Wolfpack, and we never saw those jerseys again. I feel like North Carolina is going to get beat badly tomorrow at home by Duke, wearing these hideous 1920s throwbacks, and we're never going to see them again. They're not going to sell, and they're never going to see the light of day. Ed in Winston-Salem is first up today. 336-777-1600 if you want in. Ed, what do you got on the terrible jerseys tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. This morning on the Packer show, you know, on the ACC network,
yeah,
they were talking about that, and I'm not. Have you really heard, Josh? Is it going to be the Carolina light blue and the Royal dark blue, or is Carolina going to be wearing white? Because
they're going to be wearing the Carolina blue with the UNC logo on the front, and Duke's going to be wearing Royal blue.
I know they were talking about NCAA regulations. Unless they got some type of waiver, that they had to have a number on the front of those jerseys.
I believe they did get a waiver.
He's going to keep the files straight. If there's not numbers, they're going to have to pull the guy out, point a finger, and embarrass him, say, hey, you just committed a foul. I mean, that's a big issue right there. If they don't go ahead and sew some numbers on them before game time.
It's interesting you bring that up. Thank you for the phone call, Ed. I think Nike and the school went and got the waiver. I saw somebody bring that up. Nike is well aware of this, obviously. The NCAA is well aware of this. Television networks are aware of this. North Carolina and Duke is one of the few games that are a draw every single year. So I'm 100% positive that they are well in line in the rules wearing these jerseys, and that this is something that's been months in the making. It's just when you take risks, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and we'll see how it all looks, because once I saw it side by side last night, they look terrible when they're on mannequins or when they look... I mean, a basketball jersey doesn't look cool by itself. It looks cool on the athletes. So when I saw Garrison Brooks wearing it in the promotional video North Carolina put out there, I thought it looked a lot better than the first time I saw the image. But here's what I want to do today. I want to field more phone calls just with stories regarding the rivalry. Don't call in and just say, oh yeah, I love that particular game because I'm a Tar Heel fan and that was awesome. No, I want specific stories, things happening in your life that were interesting around the rivalry. Like, I was trying to go through certain ways to watch the game while I was at a wedding or fill in the blank. I want those types of stories today. 336-777-1600. Robert, what's the best story you have surrounding Duke and North Carolina?
I think it's pretty well noted at this point, but I don't have a dog in either fight. I'm not a Duke fan. I'm not a Carolina fan. I went to East Carolina.
I don't think anybody on this show other than Sawyer has a dog in the fight. Aaron, he only cares for the Chiefs, and he still has his Chiefs jacket on.
Well, I was just telling Robert.
Really? First time you go speaking into the microphone, the first sounds you make is clearing your throat.
I had to.
He's like grammar police, but radio police. Anything in radio.
It's just terrible.
A travesty.
What do you have?
I remember growing up in a Duke household. So growing up, I had to make a business decision if I wanted a roof over my head. But as soon as I got out on my own, I had to scratch those plans.
All right. What's the best memory you have, Robert?
In school, all of my friends were Carolina fans, and it got to the point, kind of like I am now, where I just heard about it, and nonsensically, they would just say how good Carolina is and how they're never going to lose to Duke. And so I was like, you know what? I'll watch this game, even just so I could be a part of the conversation. And I remember watching it, and Duke was down the whole game, and I was in a group chat with them, and it was blowing up like, yeah, look how great Duke is. I mean, great how Carolina is. And then at the end of the game, there was a chance to win. Austin Rivers comes down, hits that corner three, and I went, wow, Duke won in the group chat, and all of my friends blocked my number for about a week and would not talk to me.
Are you the guy who texts people, it's not your fault?
I am not that guy.
When their team loses and then just continually sends the message, the goodwill hunting message, until they stop talking to you altogether.
Stop it. Stop it. No, that's not me. I don't poke the bear. I try to be a good sports friend rather than the opposite.
I love the radio calls from Duke, North Carolina that night, where North Carolina blows the lead, and as you mentioned, Rivers hits the shot. Bob Harris, the former voice of the Blue Devils, knowing now that David Shumate has been the guy for the last few years. I loved his call of that moment. Do we have that lined up?
Plumlee grabs the rebound. 84-82. Tar Heels, 9 seconds left as Rivers comes front court. Rivers works against Bullock. To the right side he goes. He'll try to step back with 1 second. Let's fly! Got it! The Blue Devils win it over North Carolina! 85-84! Oh my gosh! I do not believe this!
How many words, just the part after the shot was hit, how many words did Bob try to fit into that sentence? Because it sounded like to me, Duke beats North Carolina at the buzzer in against Carolina. I don't even know what he was trying to get at, but he was just so happy that Duke won. I want to hear what that sounds like, just all those sounds together.
Let's fly! Got it! The Blue Devils win it over North Carolina! 85-84!
Yeah. The Blue Devils win in overtime against Carolina. Yeah, maybe spread that out a bit. But what's great about it is there's a Duke radio call, and then there's a North Carolina radio call, and I imagine Jones's call sounded a lot different.
Rivers, with 2 seconds to go, try the three for the win, and he hit it. Rivers hits the three to win the game. Are you kidding me? Duke wins it by one.
It sounds like somebody kicked Jones' dog. Local radio, man. That's good stuff. Coming up, why the XFL is a perfect gamble for Vince McMahon. This is The Drive.
Providing you with a kind of sports programming that makes some people laugh. But most people just wince.
Ooh.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I can't think of a better time to talk to our next guest. It's Duke, North Carolina, meeting number one in Chapel Hill tomorrow night. We'll be there. And on top of that, it is Oscars weekend as well. Hall of Fame sports writer and movie enthusiast, Mike DeCourcy, now joining us on Twitter at TSM Mike. You can also watch his work on the Big Ten Network. And since it is Duke, North Carolina weekend, and we've been talking about this game all week long, Mike, I'm interested, as somebody who's followed college basketball as closely as you have over the decades, what is your favorite story surrounding the Duke-North Carolina rivalry?
Well, I'm a basketball guy. If you haven't ever
seen the Larry Brown at all. I don't want to hang it all on Larry, but the Larry Brown and Friends scramble in the early 1960s. I highly recommend going to YouTube and seeing it, because it's obviously not much like what you'd see anymore. It's quite an occasion, and I certainly think that it's worth seeing that. But I'm a basketball guy, so what I remember best are the great games, and I got the privilege and the honor to see. I probably was at about 10 of them, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe a few less than that. And it's always tremendous. And my first was the game, Matt Doherty game, let's call it. And I think everybody knows the story behind that, and I'm not going to tell it because I'm not getting any trouble over what happened there. But the game itself was phenomenal. Brendan Haywood wins the game on a couple of free throws. It was just, you know, that was my introduction to the series, and it was breathtaking. I just absolutely loved it. And then I was at the Chris Duhon game a few years after that when he helped them win. And then probably the one that was most memorable was the Austin Rivers shot at the end of the 2012. It was in 2012 at the Dean Dome. It was a phenomenal play and a phenomenal ending. And there just have been so many great games and so many wonderful memories. And I have written about this on many occasions, Josh, and I always get pushback from people who just don't get it. And I've called it the best rivalry in American sports. And that's a hill that I'll defend. And it's not even hard to defend. It's so obvious. You know, everything about the rivalry says it's better than anything close. I get Kentucky people and Louisville people saying ours is better. And like, yeah, really, Kentucky wins like 80%, 70%, 60%, whatever it is, way more than 50-50. So don't bring that around. And then I get the Ohio State, Michigan, or Auburn, Alabama people. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, Auburn, you know, Alabama has won 5 national championships in the last 10 years or 6, and Auburn's won 1. So the way I put it is, Alabama against anybody must be a great rivalry, you know, or Michigan State or Michigan, Ohio State in football. It's a great game. It's fabulous. But look at what's happened. I mean, Ohio State wins every time now. I mean, so none of them are as competitive, as consequential, and certainly Duke Carolina contains the same level of enmity, for lack of a better term. Maybe that's a strong word, but competitive fury, let's say.
Yeah.
It's got as much as any of those. So just, you know, if you want to bring an argument, you better come armed, because I've got plenty.
Mike is locked and loaded and passionate about college basketball. He's also passionate about movies. Robert, do we have Oscars music to back this a bit? It is Oscars weekend. What is the best movie nominated this year that you've seen, Mike DeCourcy?
Well, Josh, I've seen them all, as I have every year since 1984, in advance of the Oscars. And so I can always speak from, you know, I never have to say, oh, if I only saw that one. I've seen them all. And my choice would be 1917. I would be just as happy to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood win it. I think that I thought Marriage Story was really excellent, although I'm not sure it's quite Best Picture material. Everything else to me would be a disappointment in that grouping. I don't think any of the others rises to that level. I don't know if you've seen 1917.
I watched it earlier this week, and yeah. I what I'm trying to ask myself is, okay, what makes this movie the most memorable movie of the year? Because I get why it's a favorite, and it was excellently shot, but to me, I feel like 5 or 6 years from now, I'm going to remember Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Parasite more than I'm going to remember 1970.
I had real problems with Parasite. I didn't understand its worldview. I didn't understand what it was trying to say. And I'm not talking about the language barrier. I'm talking about what is the point? I mean, what is the point? Nothing resonated for me. I didn't get it. There were times in there where I thought it was funny, and times where I thought it was dramatic, and some of the times when I thought it was funny, it turned out to be horrible. And I like at the end of it, I'm like, no, that doesn't work. It just doesn't add up for me.
Is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio's best performance you've seen?
I've seen. I think Leonardo DiCaprio was best in Wolf of Wall Street. I thought that was the best work he's done.
Agreed.
But I thought Brad Pitt was fabulous in this. And I would love to see him win the Oscar. I think he's shown several times that he's more than just gorgeous. He's a very capable actor, and he's done that in several pictures. But I thought this, he really created a memorable character, and he executed it through some really compelling, fascinating scenes. And I think that it would be a worthwhile winner for sure.
It's an excellent year for Scarlett Johansson, as she was in. Obviously, the Marvel stuff that she's done with the Avengers is massive. And then you got Jojo Rabbit. She's nominated for Marriage Story in terms of Best Actress. But The Favorite, as is a movie we've talked about, it is Renee Zellweger in Judy. Is that where you're headed with Best Actress?
I can't see how she doesn't win it. I think it would be like a UMBC over Virginia upset if she doesn't win it. It's one of the great performances of my lifetime. It's that good. I can't, you know, maybe Sophie's Choice, maybe Michael, and I know Pacino didn't win, but, Godfather Part Two, he was unbelievable. But that it's in that category with those. It was just incredibly good. As I said the first time we talked, the thing that makes it great is not necessarily that she gets Judy Garland, but that she's not imitating her. She's being her. And it was just an incredible performance. And sometimes incredible performances in not five-star movies overwhelm the movie. I don't think it did that. The movie's terrific. It's not Best Picture, but it's certainly worth your time. But it's not worth your time just because of the performance. The performance just makes it that much better.
So let me ask you this before we let you go. Looking at the favorites in the major award categories, here's what we got. The favorites are 1917 to win Best Picture, Best Actor, Joaquin Phoenix in Joker, Renee Zellweger in Judy is the favorite for Best Actress, Best Director, Sam Mendes, who directed 1917, Best Supporting Actor, Brad Pitt, Best Supporting Actress, Laura Dern from Marriage Story. Any of those you see potentially losing out?
No, I don't think so, but I would like to see Jonathan Pryce win in the Best Actor category. I thought the Joaquin Phoenix performance was, it was phony. I didn't buy it. I didn't buy the movie, and I didn't buy him. I know what he had to do to do it, and I'm sure it was quite extreme in terms of the physicality of it, but I didn't buy it. I found it forced and a bit pedantic. That's a great word. I thought Jonathan Pryce was excellent. I thought Adam Driver was excellent in Marriage Story, and would love to see either of those two. And the one thing I have not seen Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory.
I don't think anybody has.
You know, I've read a ton about Pedro Almodovar, I just have never seen any of his movies. I would love, one of these days when I get a day off, I'm just going to sit down and roll through like four of them. But I've not gotten the opportunity to see any of them yet.
Mike, appreciate your insight on basketball and movies as always. Enjoy Duke, North Carolina tomorrow night and also the Oscars on Sunday. It's appreciated
that
you're here.
Have fun. Thanks.
All right. That's Mike DeCourcy on Twitter at TSN Mike. I thought Robert was going to play the music up and get us out of here. The way that they do when they do those speeches at the end of, like when somebody's going a little bit too long. Like, is this segment going a little bit too long right now?
No, I enjoy the film talk.
I do too. I'm so excited for Sunday. I don't know if I'm going to wear a tuxedo in my house and dress my cat up in a tuxedo, but I might. Just might.
Winnie would look great in a tuxedo.
Yeah, she would. Apparently, she's 1 or 2 pounds overweight.
Oh, come on, that's cat shaming.
I know,
right? We're not gonna start cat shaming in here.
That's
Winnie
right.
is a beautiful cat, just the way she is.
That's what I'm saying, and I'm not gonna be the person that cat shames. That's not the radio show that we do around here. Darren Vaught is about to walk into our studios, and it's time to start sharing with Darren. What would have Duke, North Carolina radio coverage have sounded like 100 years ago when they were wearing jerseys that maybe looked like the ones they were going to wear tomorrow night? Find out when we begin sharing with Darren next.
He was never voted most likely to succeed.
You're such a loser.
But then again, were you?
The very concept is unimaginable.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
We are sharing with Darren, right from the David Glenn Show. And Darren, we were talking earlier this morning before you went in with DG, before we came on the air. And we were just talking about these jerseys North Carolina and Duke are going to be wearing tomorrow. Throwbacks to 1920.
Woof.
And they don't really make much sense because Duke wasn't even called Duke in 1920. They were still Trinity at that time. I think North Carolina went by the White Phantoms. Not awesome either. So I don't know why we're really doing the throwback to 1920, the first time these two teams, air quotes, met each other. I guess Nike needs the cash grab and people just try to do new things. But it had me thinking. We were talking about this. Wouldn't it be cool if all the media tomorrow dressed up like it was the 1920s?
I love this idea.
The way that the players are going to be wearing uniforms harkening back to that time. Why not the media, too? I still have stuff from a 1920s party I had a couple weeks ago, like a murder mystery party.
I would be into a just like a particularly thick and itchy jacket and an extremely wide tie and then one of like the classic reporter hats with maybe the little tag that says media coming out of the brim.
Robert, see if you can find on YouTube, I think his name's Scoops Callahan, see if you can find Mac Brown being asked a question by, I think, a radio host in Dallas whose bit was he would go to games and ask players and coaches questions that sounded like they were from the 1920s. And Mac Brown was asked a question and understood everything completely. Usually it's the bit, they laugh at it, they don't understand what's being asked because the slang back then is a lot different than the slang that we use today. But in this instance, Mac Brown understood everything that was asked, and he had the coach speak ready to go.
So we're going to go win in Houston.
Coach, your defense has been the cat's meow all year long. How did Stephen McGee give your boys the business?
Stephen's a good player, and they ran the option play, and we probably weren't as ready for it as we should have been because that was the biggest play of the game, and Jaworski made some plays up inside and give them credit. And we adjusted to it pretty well the second half. I think they gave up two long runs maybe, but we did stop them better the second half.
Yeah, there it is.
He didn't miss a beat.
He didn't. Why is that guy giving you the business? You know, pretty good stuff there. So I would like for media members to dress like it's 1920. I don't think I'm going to do it because the one time I went against the grain before a game this year, I wore a Christmas sweater to the Wofford game at Carmichael, and more than a handful of people were looking at me like I was a bleephole. And I don't want to do that at the Duke Carolina game.
I respect
tomorrow.
You throwing out as bait, hey, anybody else doing this time?
That's why I did it. I put it
That's
on
good.
Twitter just
That's
to see
good.
If someone would say, this is great. And guess what? Zero traction. Nobody thinks it's a good idea at all. Which means what we're about to do. No one likes the jerseys that are harkening back to that time. No one liked my idea about dressing up like it's the 20s. So what we're about to do here might not be a good idea either. But sometimes you just got to throw darts and see what sticks. Robert, cue up some 1920s music. Let's hear what it would have sounded like if this game featuring these teams, these schools, and these players were playing, but it was in 1920.
I've got to put the record on.
Is that you putting the record on?
Yeah, I had, that's why it was scratchy. I had to find
There's a record player over there? Listen here, see? Why don't you ankle over here? Let me tell you about this real sock knolliger that is North Carolina and Duke playing each other. These jerseys look real swell. And when these two teams meet, I'm going to tell you what. Cassius Stanley is the real bee's knees. Guy you need to really keep an eye on out there. In North Carolina, whoa, they look ossified when they play. I do say, and it looks like Roy Williams' club might have to get his team off the giggle juice. Wouldn't you say, Darren?
Well, Josh, I tell you, I've heard all week, people say when it comes to Duke, North Carolina, you can throw out the records. And I say that's phonus balonus. Tell it to Sweeney, I say. Cole Anthony's back, sure. He's the big B-M-O-C-C. He could get any of the babes, the bims, the broads, the dames in Chapel Hill he wants. He's going to rake in the Mizuma when he goes to the association. But after that BC game at the
when
Duke got off to a slow start, Coach K, now, he's not going to let them dewdrop or take any wooden nickels anymore. They should win, see?
Yeah, Duke, I'll tell you what, this is a hotsy-totsy team, one that I really like to win the whole tournament. And if I were a fan in the stands, I'll tell you what, I'd be half seas over watching these two teams do battle. I mean, if I could handcuff this game, I certainly would. I mean, and if you don't like this matchup, I tell you, go chase yourself, Robert Walsh.
Hang on a second. I came in this speakeasy looking for some flapper girls. Do y'all know where I can find me a flapper at? Or a nice drink of gin to wet my whistle?
I'll tell you a place you can go. It's called Top of the Hill. Or you can hit up Incendiary Brewing Company. It's Iwitz Salem. But listen here, those are places you got to keep on the down low. Because you're not going to find any blue noses in those places. You need to... You can't be telling anybody where you get some of the giggle juice, you see? This is prohibition.
But Thanks. Top of the Hill, though, that's a good place for a real good rub now.
Now, don't go around slinging it all around
a person like yourself.
Town.
Robert, get your hands off that dame. Bank's closed.
She didn't have a problem with it. I don't know the fancy terms y'all know. Y'all are pulling all these out.
That's because you're a Reuben.
Yeah, I'm over here Reuben it up. I'll have a Reuben Stutters, please.
We're people that know your onions.
I tell you who knows their onions. Point guard for Duke, Trey Jones. He really knows his onions. Unless Duke goes on a toot the night before, they should really perform well.
Yeah. Man. And when Duke wins, man, they're going to be drinking Panther piss. This is the way that they celebrate over there in Durham. Like I said, till they're ossified. Maybe get a couple of quilts inside them. Maybe hit the rub up.
You'll get spifflicated.
How many do y'all have left? Literally, you have been doing this for 7 minutes.
Whoopee! Why are you sounding so upstage?
I just want to know how many you have left.
You're being a real warp.
Yeah, I mean, where's the
where's the what? No.
Where's the specificated fella that was in here earlier?
He's off with that dame.
He was a real seeker.
Spifflicated?
I'm out of here.
Spifflicated.
I think this segment's been a real darb. If I'm being honest, 336-777-1600.
Listeners probably think we're a bit zazzled, huh?
That is the telephone number that we have, 336-777-1600. If you want part of our conversation, this is, I mean, is Fireside Chat too soon? Or is that, you know, I think that's like 19, maybe 15, 20.
Yeah, a little too soon.
Gosh, a little bit too soon for that. We're going to create this thing
called
the Fireside.
Brought to you by, well, nobody, because the economy's terrible.
On Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. Aaron, do you have anything to contribute to this?
I got nothing. You guys got all the bases covered.
There you go.
Maybe the bit could be sponsored by the Great Gatsby.
Applesauce! This segment's been the berries, if you ask me. We actually do have big news to talk about. Robert, get rid of this. Darren Vaught is in here. We're sharing with Darren. And the big news of the day, actually not regarding North Carolina and Duke, it's regarding North Carolina A&T that is going to be jumping conferences as they're leaving the MEAC to join the Big South. The announcement coming earlier today in Greensboro. which means they're not going to be able to compete anymore for the Celebration Bowl national title that they've won three of the last 4 years. This is really big news. It's a good step up that makes a lot of sense. I love North Carolina A&T being able to go up against the likes of High Point, which you're the voice of, UNC Asheville, Campbell, Gardner-Webb. It just makes sense in that case for North Carolina A&T to make this jump, and it's going to start in the 2021-2022 academic year.
Yeah, so they'll play one more full season as full members of the MEAC, but it's an interesting move to me, Josh, because I don't know unless A&T is angling for a step up to FBS football and getting out of the FCS. I
don't think they are. They're still going to be playing FCS football, is my understanding.
Yeah, no, that's the case, but and at least not immediately, they're not angling for the FBS label. But they could follow in the footsteps of like a Liberty, who used the Big South to then propel up to independent status in the FBS, but they're FBS. And if they're not trying to do that, I'm not 100% sure what A&T is after here. There are obvious benefits for the Big South to embrace A&T. They're going to compete in football immediately. I mean, that's a national powerhouse in football. And usually pretty good in men's basketball. So you upgrade your conference in both of those ways. You even it out to 12 teams, whereas there are 11 currently in the Big South, in men's basketball anyways. But I don't know, because with A&T, they've always been hesitant to do the FCS playoffs, because most of the time when they do, say when Central beats them out for a spot in the Celebration Bowl,
right,
they don't fare that well. So without the Celebration Bowl, where you can contend literally every single year for an HBCU national championship, I don't know if their recruiting improves that much.
But maybe some of the gates do. At places like this, the gates do matter. And if you have more games of in-state significance, and I'm specifically talking about basketball right now, where A&T actually has a really good team this year, I think that probably is something that might be a driving force in this. The only thing I think about at this present moment is something that you've had a chance to cover pretty much all your years since you've been with the David Glenn Show. It's the Eagle Aggie Classic, where you hope that's something that could continue to be maintained. In basketball, it would be in a non-conference sense, it would be before you get to the new year in basketball season, in all likelihood, and maybe you're only able to play one time a year. In football, I guess it might have to be the same deal.
Yeah, and I don't have concerns about that. I mean, A&T is going to want to schedule Central. Central is going to want to schedule A&T.
I hope so.
You just go from the home and home to one game in each sport, probably, per season, which is, you know, the case in football anyways, because you alternate sites. So it's just one game in basketball instead of two. So that's not a huge deal, I don't think. Hampton, which is formerly a member of the MEAC, is now in the Big South, and they've had these sorts of issues, too, with old rivalries that they've retained. And keep in mind, too, Central and A&T haven't always been the members of the same conference. A&T has always been a MEAC member,
right,
but Central joined after the fact, and they still did that prior to. They kept up the rivalry.
Darren Vaught's with us. We are sharing with Darren. Find him on Twitter, at Darren Vaught. The Drive is brought to you by our friends at the law offices of Timothy D. Wellborn. They sponsor this studio. Learn about all the ways you can be benefited by the folks at the law offices of Timothy D. Wellborn at timwellborn.com. You'll know when you need us. Do we have the drunk from the 1920s back with us?
Yeah, what do you want?
How are you doing, man?
I'm pretty drunk.
Who do you think's going to win tomorrow?
The Renegades.
What? Yeah, the Renegades are playing tomorrow.
I think they're okay. Going to win.
All right. You are listening. You heard it there first. The big matchup tomorrow, the Renegades are going
to
play.
I'm going to go back to the Flapper Girl. I knew 3 20s words.
You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals making up Sports Hub. Try it. Yes, Darren.
No, I was just laughing at Robert. That's
yeah.
All.
Well, Robert, yeah. He has a vast knowledge, even though we just... Were you looking at the same link I was that had the 59 slang uses, the first Google search? Because that's kind of what I was doing.
I dug a little deep. There were some interesting ones in there that I was previously unaware of. It's not like I use these words, but...
Yeah,
that
girl that the drunk was chasing was a real bearcat.
Welcome to the show that cloned the Loch Ness Monster and got her drunk.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
Andrew Carter going to join us to talk about Wake Forest basketball and how things have really dwindled for that program since Skip Prosser's passing nearly 15 years ago. Darren Vaught's in with us right now. We are sharing with Darren, Duke, North Carolina tomorrow. I'm going to be at that game. I think Darren's sending an intern, but we'll certainly all be keeping eyes on the Blue Devils and the Tar Heels when they do battle. And in honor of that, and also the Oscars coming up on Sunday, which I'm very excited about, Robert has devised the movie game. I don't know if it's going to be basketball themed or Oscars themed. He has told me nothing. So don't accuse me of cheating. I have no idea where we're headed with this whatsoever. Did I end up winning last week?
No, you lost.
Oh.
I won.
Darren won. We'll see if he can win for the second consecutive week. It's going to be Aaron and Darren playing the movie game.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
It's time for some kind of movie game.
All right, all right, all right.
With Josh Graham and Darren Vaught.
Show me the money.
Hey, it's like we're back in the ragtime days. Hey, how about that?
Is that the drunk over there?
Yeah, watch out for the scallywags and the scoodle-doodles or whatever you guys said.
Did you just... Did you just do pirate speak?
What? Is Scoodle Doodles
No, the Scallywags.
Oh, okay. I don't know my... Welcome to the movie game. What's going on, guys? Darren, good to see you. Josh, Aaron, my favorite guys. I have kept it locked down because I am worried about Josh's ability to cheat at this game. I've locked it down, and I'm going to reveal it to you guys now. This is some of the best rivalries in movies.
Oh...
It makes sense, right?
It makes a little sense, but I'm interested to see where you're headed.
Yeah.
Explain the rules to the game before we start playing.
The game is the movie game, and you guys are going to try to guess the scores based off the Rotten Tomatoes audience score. The guys get the closest will have the lower score. Lower score in the game wins. I'll give you an update to the score after the second movie. What did I leave out? You're spacing around with your eyeballs.
Rotten Tomatoes is 1 to 100.
1 to 100.
And if you're within 10... Fourth movie.
We got a fourth movie, and I actually have a clip for it. I really hope you guys get to it because it's one of my favorites. Anyway.
And I forget, is it 5 points docked off your score or 10 if you get it right on the nose?
Let's say 10 this week.
I like it.
I'm in charge,
Robert.
Baby. Yeah, right? Throwing around the big bucks. Anyway, your first movie, one of my favorites, an iconic rivalry between Rocky and Apollo. It's Rocky 1.
I just want to say one thing to my wife who's home. Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
I love you. You could hear her a little bit in the background.
Wouldn't Rocky 1 just be called Rocky?
Okay, dude, no one...
I had the same thought.
Josh,
I'm sorry, Robert.
Okay, also, Darren is docked 5 points. You both are starting at negative 5. If you criticize the host on this show, you lose points. It's a new rule!
But...
Kids, do you agree?
Am I gaining points, actually, if I'm negative 5?
No, it's like plus 5. Okay, you know what? This has plus 10. Josh, it's plus 10. Rocky 1, are your scores in?
Aaron, do you got something written down? Just making sure.
I do.
Right.
Yeah.
I worry about what's going on over here,
Darren,
Josh
I'm looking at you over there.
No, we're good. I wrote my score immediately, man.
Okay.
Josh, what you got?
89%. I think this was received very well right from the jump.
89%. Darren, what you got?
I have similar feelings. I've got 84.
84? And Aaron?
I've got 80%.
80%. Rocky comes in at 69.
Oh, that's not nice.
Dude, it's not nice. I was very upset about the audience score on it. But like I said, I don't make the rules. Actually, I do, but Rotten Tomato makes the score. So starting off, You guys are in a little bit of a hole. Not a big deal, but we're going to work our way there.
What's the second movie?
Second movie between Peter LaFleur and White Goldman.
Goodman.
Goodman. Hey, okay, that's another 5 points. It's dodgeball.
W-H-I-T.
Learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or...
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
E-W-H-I-T-E.
I was like a little over a year ago at a bachelor weekend thing, and this just happened to be on Comedy Central, and I hadn't seen it in like maybe several years, and I totally had forgotten until that point how quotable this movie is.
It's pretty up there as far as like the Talladega Nights, Step Brothers.
Yeah, there are like a lot of just like one-liners that I will casually use that I don't even realize I'm using them and that they're from this movie anymore. They're just that ingrained in the vernacular.
What you got, Josh?
91%.
Ooh.
Going really high.
Ooh.
What you got, Darren?
72.
And Aaron, what you got, man?
I went for 88%.
88%. Dodgeball comes in at 76.
Oh!
Damn it.
Just not good. This is not
good
at all.
I feel good about this. I feel good about this.
Right. Yeah, I know you feel good. You were off by 6. All right, what's the score?
Score coming out of here is Darren sitting in first with 19. Aaron challenging by hand with 23. And Josh with 44. Anybody's game. Still a fun game.
It is
right
anybody's
here.
Game. Within four, Aaron got the early lead, and then Darren retook it. So you got to be within 10 for all of us to play a golden movie. What is the third movie?
The third movie is the original Karate Kid, Daniel and Johnny-san.
Mmm.
Think about it while I play this clip.
First wash all the car, then wax. Wax.
Wait, what do I have to wash all the car?
Wax on, right hand. Wax off, left hand. Wax on, wax off.
Maybe you can wax off your bad score, Josh. What you got?
I'm going low. 67%. Got to take a shot here.
67%.
Aaron. I respect that you have to do that, but I'm going 87.
87 from Darren and Aaron. What you got?
Got a 79%er.
79%.
What are you looking over here, Josh Graham?
Just making sure you had it written down.
Don't worry about what's
be.
Going on over here.
Just looking over there.
All right. There is going to be a golden movie. Currently, after three movies, Josh.
What is the score?
I'm about to. You're in last. You wait on me.
I need to know the movie score.
I'm about to read it. Throw my pen at you through this glass. Jesus Christ. Karate Kid. I hate when he does it. You want me to host or do you want to do it and I'll play? 82%. Karate Kid.
Aaron Gabriel.
Josh is in last with a funny 69%. Darren.
That's nice.
Aaron, you're in second with 26. Darren has 24. We're going to go to a golden movie, but I kind of want to shut this train down right now.
I'm excited. No, you like this one. The golden movie is one of your favorites.
It is one of my favorites. The classic rivalry between Ray Gibson and Claude Banks, Life.
Is whoa.
Is that
I've never seen Life.
You've never seen Life.
Classic movie.
You know who the daddy of that baby is?
Jang-a-lang.
Who is it?
My baby boss.
Mine, I'm the father of that baby boss.
Boss.
Any fool can see that baby belongs to me.
I want it different. That little rascal belonged to me.
I be the paw boss.
I'm the paw of that there youngin' boss. I'm the peppy.
Classic.
I've never seen this movie.
Jang-a-lang.
Go.
Jang-a-lang.
A lot of quotes from this one as well.
Darren, have you seen this movie?
I have.
I'm just alone on this one then.
Yeah, you're on an island.
Okay. Well,
we can start with Josh. If he hits it right on the head and you guys mess up miserably, he could still win.
I'm going 17%.
Okay, Josh is not going to win.
Just because that's the only way I have. It's the only chance I have to win.
You got to throw the Hail Mary. I get it.
Darren, what you got?
82.
82?
I see you're 82 and raise you 10. I'm going with 92%.
I respect
92%. Fellas, life comes in at 77.
Oh!
Darren, you are our repeat champion.
No! Woo!
Let the people
hear it. I wanted to win it.
Sorry, Aaron.
I wanted to win it on Karate Kid so that I could say, for Danny LaRusso! Somebody get him a body bag. Let me wax poetic about Mookie Betts being traded to the Dodgers for just a couple of seconds, if I might.
Yeah.
I get it, but I don't. And what I mean by it when I say that is that if you would have put me in Shane Bloom, the general manager for the Boston Red Sox, shoes the morning of the trade, I get the circumstances in which you have to do it. But this is on the Red Sox because they signed off on the contracts of Nate Eovaldi and David Price, who was also traded, that put the team in this situation to trade a transformative generational talent in Mookie Betts to avoid this mass luxury tax that is kind of fictional in baseball with a major market team with one of the most historic franchises ever with the Red Sox. So I get it, but I don't. You guys know I'm a Red Sox fan, and that chapped me earlier this week.
Darren, good to see High Point winning last night. Have a good call this weekend as well. Appreciate you spending time here.
Of course, as always, guys.
Andrew Carter, one of the best writers in the state of North Carolina, has in recent weeks explored Wake Forest basketball and also Roy Williams' background as a head coach going back to his high school days on Black Mountain. Andrew will share some of his findings with us next.
Josh Graham serves up the sports the way Jose's Cantina serves up their gut buster burrito. Have a napkin ready, because it's gonna be messy. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
One of our state's best writers, Andrew Carter, multi-time NSMA award winner, I believe, is now with us. From the Raleigh News and Observer, you can read his stuff, newsobserver.com. This week, he was documenting the recency of Wake Forest struggling yet again to have any success in the ACC in basketball, but really chronicling things dating back to Skip Prosser's death in 2007. And also in recent memory, Andrew also went up to Black Mountain, had a chance to go to where Roy Williams' coaching career began. Of course, he was a high school basketball coach before becoming an assistant at North Carolina. So the perfect guy to talk to this week as Duke gets set to face North Carolina in Chapel Hill tomorrow in the Smith Center. And of course, being here in the Triad, I'm interested in some of the things you've learned with your story. Andrew, let's start with this. You couldn't get John Curry to agree to an interview. They didn't agree to one for your story. So what's the one thing you wished you could have learned from him if he did agree to an interview?
Yeah, I think the one... Yeah, that's a good question. I have to say, I think that would be how much of a say... Well, I guess he didn't have any say, but just what he thought entering that situation, knowing that he was probably going to have to make a pretty big decision, not even a year into his tenure. How much of an obstacle it was for him to take the job. Obviously, it wasn't that big of one since he took it. But just getting his honest thoughts about what he was entering would have been interesting to me. And also maybe just some insight in terms of how that whole thing went down behind the scenes. Obviously, Ron Wellman retiring, that was kind of the last thing that he did during his tenure as athletic director was announce that Danny Manning was going to come back. And you guys probably know some of that stuff better than I do, being there in that market. But I would have been interested in learning more just about that dynamic, I think.
How much of a favor did Ron Wellman do for John Curry saying, no, this is going to be my decision, whatever it's going to be, and then weeks later saying that Danny's going to come back? Because remember, Curry, he was at Tennessee, and in the first year he was there, he fired an unpopular football coach, and football is king at that place. So that hire was going to be the most important hire he made. And when it wasn't an approved hire, it was Greg Schiano, it all exploded and John Curry lost his job. So do you think, even if it wasn't intended to be a favor for Curry, it was Ron Wellman taking the responsibility for this?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to describe it. And I also think, too, that it was just a result of just the circumstances, you know, why Danny Manning is still there today. It was just kind of this confluence of events with Wellman retiring. You can certainly understand his desire not to burden the next guy, the next athletic director, with such a huge decision right when he walks in and has taken that job and is trying to get settled. And, oh, by the way, you have to hire a new basketball coach, too. So, yeah, I get it, and I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, but man, it's just, you know, I think it's just bad timing, and it's unfortunate, you know, for the folks there. And, you know, Danny Manning, I think, you know, obviously he's a good guy and he wants to do well. And, you know, no one can question his basketball credentials growing up the way he did, being a basketball prodigy and the success that he had as a player. You know, I do think that he's put in his time, even as a coach. He worked his way up from an operations type role at Kansas, became an assistant coach. You know, I think the unfortunate thing is he probably just was not ready for an ACC job, only was a head coach for 2 years at Tulsa, of course. And those guys, you know, his second year, you can make the argument at Tulsa that really, you know, a hot stretch of, I don't know, like a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, like 6 games, whatever that might have been in terms of length of time, wound up putting him in a position to get that Wake Forest job. And I think it's just a case of the guy not being quite ready to take that job. And, you know, he entered some challenging circumstances as well,
right?
As I articulated, as Dino Gaudio articulated in that story.
That was the quote that really stuck out the most to me in the story. And I strongly suggest, if you're a Wake Forest fan or even someone who just follows the ACC closely, to read what Andrew wrote about Wake Forest. You can find it at newsobserver.com and also in the pages of The Observer. But you got this from Dino Gaudio, where he just said that it was gut-wrenching for him to see what the environment was when he, with Louisville, went to the Joel Coliseum last year. But before we move on, this is just something I'm curious about. Wake Forest is a private school. Jeff Goodman, in the middle of last basketball season, said it was an $18 million buyout, but as soon as that came out, I had folks at Wake Forest, had people around here who told me, yeah, it's not really 18. It's less than that. Did you learn anything about the contract details?
Did not learn anything that I could definitively write.
Okay.
You know, in a way with any kind of authority. And I heard some rumblings, same kind of thing it sounds like that you've heard, that might not be necessarily accurate. Or, you know, oftentimes in a buyout situation, you know, it might start at one number and then obviously it goes down the longer the person is in that role. Mm. So I would have been very surprised if that was accurate as of, you know, last year after year five or during year five, that it would still cost $18 million to buy him out. You know, but regardless, it does sound like it would be an impressive sum of money, even if it's not $18 million. You know, it does sound like it would be quite the financial obligation to buy him out. And, you know, honestly, I think it would have been in Wake's best interest to correct that, because that number was everywhere. You know, Jeff Goodman, you know, he has a reputation well-deserved for knowing those kinds of details in terms of contracts and that sort of thing. And Wake, being a private school, has no obligation to release that information. But if that, you know, if it was way off, I would have liked to have thought that they would have been motivated to correct it or at least provide some context. And of course, they've had a lot of opportunities to do that and just haven't.
I learned a lot from your story about Roy Williams when you went up to Black Mountain. I didn't know he had a 2-win season at the start of things as a high school head coach.
Now he's the same team twice.
Yeah, and he's also now the all-time winningest coach in North Carolina basketball history since you wrote that story. What is something you learned about Roy? And there were a lot of neat photos in that story as well. Something you learned about Roy that you didn't know when you climbed the mountain?
Well, I had a chance when I was reporting that story to interview a guy named Porky Spencer, who played on Roy's very first team. He was part of that 2-win team. I think he was a junior. I think he played on Roy's first two teams at Owen High. And I'm not quite sure I knew the extent of Roy's relationship with some of those players that he coached on that very first team. Porky Spencer is a really interesting character. He works at a Coca-Cola distribution center up there near Black Mountain. Basically a place where they, I think it's not really a bottling plant, but it's kind of where they put the Cokes on the pallets and the trucks and kind of send them out to wherever they're going, and he's a part of that. Roy, obviously, by the way, loves his Coca-Cola, which is kind of an interesting tie-in. But yeah, Porky and him have, they've remained great friends. They've kind of created this beautiful friendship over, the past 40 years. And Porky really has not missed hardly any UNC basketball games since Roy Williams has been back at UNC, dating back to 2003. Porky drives down from Black Mountain basically every game. I think he's missed five in the past 17 years, 18 years. And that's a pretty lengthy drive. That's like a 3.5-hour drive, I want to say, from Black Mountain to the Smith Center. 3 hours, and he drives down and drives back every night. So it's little stuff like that, I feel like, that really stood out when I was reporting that story, just Roy's relationships with people like Porky, with some other folks up there. Roy talks about that from time to time, but until you go up there and you kind of immerse yourself in that environment and get to know some of those folks, it's kind of difficult for that to translate. And that was kind of a really neat thing I feel like I learned going up there.
Last thing for Andrew Carter, Raleigh News and Observer on Twitter @_AndrewCarter. What is the game or the moment that sticks with you when you think about the time you were on the North Carolina beat and covering this rivalry that many call the best rivalry in all of college basketball?
Oh, man. Well, UNC fans are going to have one more reason not to like me, but it has to be the Austin River shot.
Yeah.
That was the most iconic single game moment I feel like I covered. That was actually my first year covering UNC, that 2011-12 season. Obviously, they were winning that game by a decent margin late. I think they were up 10 or 12 points with about 3 minutes to go. And, of course, Duke comes storming back. There were some questionable calls here and there. I believe Seth Curry walked.
Zeller
traveled at one point. You can debate whether Tyler Zeller got pushed in the back at one point when he was going out trying to block a shot. Zeller actually tipped a ball and went into the basket on one of Duke's earlier possessions leading up to that River shot. But that's probably the moment. And then there were some great games in Cameron that I covered. There was one in particular. I think it might have been the 2016 game, Marcus Page's last year. UNC beat them there in what I remember to be a pretty good game. And then the year before that, I want to say, is the year that UNC lost in overtime.
They honored Dean
Smith. Hicks, I think, passed up a shot in the lane. They gave it to Tokoto on the baseline. He missed. But there's been so many, neat, just kind of cool moments over the years. And, it doesn't look like on paper tomorrow might not be one of them. But, if anything, this rivalry over the years has taught us not to take anything for granted, not to make any predictions. Who knows what's going to happen?
Andrew, appreciate you spending the time. And, man, it's obvious you spent so much time on the stories you've written that we've just talked about. Appreciate the time and congratulations on the success.
Well, thank you, Josh. Likewise, and always a pleasure to speak with you, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's Andrew Carter from the News and Observer with us. After him saying that, Robert, I don't think the right thing to do would be making a prediction for this game, but I just don't see North Carolina beating Duke tomorrow. I just don't. I think there's a 10% chance, and it's not a random number that I bring up. I think Duke beats North Carolina convincingly because people say, hey, you should just throw the record books out. Throw them out the window here. You shouldn't do that in this case because there have actually been 10 instances in the last 30 years Duke's played North Carolina where one team wasn't an NCAA tournament team, wasn't going to get in as an at-large, And the better team has won 9 out of the 10 times. Go to 2010. Last time North Carolina didn't make it. Duke won in the Smith Center by 10. They won in Cameron by 30. Go to 2003. Doherty's last year. You have the great close game where Haywood hits the free throws, but Duke won 2 out of 3 games that year. Go to 2002, the year before, the 8-win team for North Carolina. Duke played Carolina 3 times, won all 3. Here were the margins. 29 points in the Smith Center, 25 in Cameron, 12 in Charlotte. For Duke, the Pete Gaudette team, when Coach K was out with the injury. You got the Jeff Capel shot, and that's what everybody goes back to with the throw the record books out. That North Carolina team was awesome, and Duke, they had the Jeff Capel shot forcing double overtime. North Carolina won the game, and North Carolina won by 13 points in the Smith Center a few weeks later. So all that I just mentioned, that's 10 games, and the underdog is won once in those instances. So it is a very small, minute chance that North Carolina is going to win. And here's the other thing. I get it's a really strange, uneven year in college basketball, but Duke has crushed the bottom tier of the ACC. Miami and Wake joined North Carolina as the ACC teams with less than 5 wins this year. 5 conference wins. Here are the margins that Duke has beaten Wake and Miami this year. 33, 30, and 31. It's a bad time for North Carolina to play Duke. Bad luck has struck them. Brandon Robinson's out, which means Trey Jones is going to play every minute that Cole's out there. Every minute Cole Anthony's on the floor, he's going to be blanketed by one of the best perimeter defenders out there. Duke's probably going to go big to make sure they can rebound with North Carolina, who is the top rebounding team in all of college basketball. Boston College, they gave Duke a scare earlier in the week. Coach K, after the game, says, I've been telling them how good BC was. They didn't listen. They have adversity to face with me and only me. It's bad luck. That was the game before North Carolina, because all North Carolina has to see in the media is how bad the Tar Heels are. That's what Duke has in the media. Just how bad North Carolina is, why Duke's going to win by a ton. Guys like Josh Graham, that's what they're saying here. Duke is not going to get off to a poor start again. So my prediction, I like Duke to win by 16. 77-71. I think it's going to be remembered as the jersey game, and they're never going to wear those damn things again that look terrible in many people's minds. Let's go to Travis in Winston-Salem. Apparently, I'm a hypocrite. Travis, why am I a hypocrite?
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Travis.
You said on Wednesday.
Yep.
You broke down why UNC could win.
I said three things. Let me hold you up real quick, Travis. Let me just hold you up real fast, Travis.
You said 10%.
I did give a 10% chance. I said that North Carolina on Wednesday. It was actually yesterday, I believe. I said this.
Okay, yesterday. Okay.
North Carolina needed to get Cole Anthony shooting at least 40%, something that's happened 5 times this year, and not playing Trey Jones. They need to out-rebound Duke, and on top of that, they need to get off to a great start. So if all 3 of those things happen, North Carolina has a chance to win, but I don't think 2 out of the 3 could happen.
Now, you said this is, you're like, no, throw it. No, I'm not about throw out the records. That's not me. I'm not that guy. Then you go on to say they can win. And now you're giving them a 10% chance. So, I mean,
there is a chance.
Yes. Yeah. Jim Carrey said that too. So,
all right. Yeah. A little bit less percent. Thank you, Travis. Like, I'm not saying North Carolina can't win. I'm saying it's a 10% chance. That's what it is. And I have stats to back that stuff up. Right? Are you already planning the Sarah McLachlan for Monday?
I wasn't until you brought it up. Now if they win, I'm going to have to make another one of those things.
Duke by 16. All right, WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals make up Sports Up Try. Just clip that last part out where I'm acknowledging the Sarah McLachlan's about to happen. And, yeah,